Welcome to Tales from the Dance Floor, a podcast exploring the lives and times of people from all walks of life who followed their passions and made careers out of DJing, producing, parties, dance culture, and the music industry. I'm Phil Morse from Digital DJ Tips. Let's get started. I have with me today Karim Morsi, whose name won't be familiar to most of you, but if I mention algorithm and DJ software, as in DJAY, then I'm sure the penny will drop. Karim is one of the founders of the company behind DJ software. So hello, Karim.
Hello, Phil. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you here. And, you know, we've known each other for a long time. It's awesome to, well, we don't often get a chance to sit down for an hour and just chat, do we? So in itself, that's a good thing.
That's true, yeah.
So, Karim, as I say, people will know your software. Anyone with an Apple device for sure, but nowadays your software is available on other platforms as well. We'll have heard of, possibly seen DJ, and we've got an awful lot to talk about because they may have even seen you in an Apple keynote. You seem to have this knack of getting yourself on stage with the biggest tech company in most of our minds. So, you know, I'd love to talk to you about all of that stuff, but maybe we can start off by tell people what you would say your job title is. What is it you do?
I'm the CEO of Algorithm. So I'm pretty much in charge of the company. And I started as an engineer and I'm still doing not too much engineering, but every now and then I try to get my hands dirty.
Okay. So did you start the company how did the company come about? Were you one of the founders?
Yeah, I'm one of the co-founders of Algorithm.
Okay. So, and how long have you been running Algorithm?
It's our 13th year now, actually. So
wow.
We co-founded Algorithm in 2006. And yeah, it's been ages in computer industry terms.
So you co-founded it. If I'm trying to think back through my kind of tech timeline, before the first iPhone dropped, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So what were you programming for back then? Because you're known for being on iOS, right? Primarily. So it didn't even exist then. So how did the company start?
Right. So we were passionate Mac users and we always wanted to bring an app that was sort of similar like iLife. Like if you think of iPhoto and iMovie, we kind of wanted to do the same thing for DJing, like create a Mac application that's fun and easy to use, that has elegant design, and basically make DJing accessible to every normal person.
Okay, so and then presumably as soon as the iPhone came along, you were kind of smitten. And how long did it take you to get the first iOS version of your app out?
So we started in 2006 on the Mac, and pretty much we weren't cross-platform, so we built the software exclusively for Mac OS X at the time, and for us that made it very easy to bring that to iOS. So it's kind of hard to say how long it took, because we were basically able to take 80% of what we already created over years and bring that to iOS. Of course, you know, the early iPhone models and iPads, they weren't as fast as they are today. So we really had to go back to the drawing board in terms of optimizing the performance of the software, making sure everything in terms of the design language that it's designed for touch. So those are obviously things that we spent quite some time, I would say over 1 to 2 years, like perfecting that. But then, I think we were there pretty much in the early days, and it was great to see people, you know, adopting the app on iOS and making it accessible to even more people than it was accessible before.
So you're based in Germany. Whereabouts in Germany are you guys?
We're in the south of Germany in a beautiful city called Munich.
I know Munich well, reasonably well. I've visited, put it that way, and I can confirm to our listeners who've never visited that area of the world, it is indeed beautiful, nestled just above the Alps, right? Just north
Correct.
Of the Alps, and
yes.
Very green, and a lovely part of the world indeed. And how big is the company? Are you, you know, let people get a sense of how big you are.
We're 15 people now.
Okay. And is that reasonably stable? Are you kind of like happy with the position you're at? Is that kind of what you always envisaged Algorithm being, or is this part of a, you know, massive push for world domination?
No, I mean, I think in terms of the people, like from the early days, we've always grown very organically. And in fact, when we co-founded Algorithm, we were friends, you know, we co-founded it out of college. So pretty much, you know, we've grown the company organically. And we usually, when we bring people to the team, it's usually people we know, or, you know, we get acquainted with them. So it's kind of a slow organic growth, but now it's a very powerful and robust team that has grown over a decade now.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear. And I think a lot of businesses are like that. I can certainly relate to that. Digital DJ Tips is a team of eight, and that's grown. We are 8 years old. So, you know, that's a kind of rate of one person a year. Not so different to you guys, right?
Right.
So, and again, it tends to be people who've got to know us and become students, or some way connected with the company as well. So I totally get that. So in a way, it's a passion game, isn't it, for you guys? It's something that you're doing because you really want to do it.
Absolutely. I mean, I started DJing when I was 12, and I've pretty much DJed my entire life. So it was really great to combine, you know, my professional life with my passion. And we're still as passionate as we were on day one when we founded the company. We love what we do, and it's just great to see people loving our work and people embracing the art of DJ through our software and apps. So that's actually a very rewarding aspect of our work.
So you say you started DJing personally at age 12, and I'm going to ask you what your moment was. What was that moment when you thought, what is this thing? I need to do this. Was it on a dance floor? Was it watching someone else DJing? Was it, you know, discovering that it's possible to blend tunes without gaps? What was your moment?
I think it was several moments. It's kind of this thing that this desire that grew inside of me. So my musical career, if you will, started when I was 4 years old. That's when I started playing the piano. So from very early on, I had a very close connection to music, and it was a way for me to express myself. And I think that special moment in terms of DJing was around the time when I was like 12 years old. I was in my parents' living room, and I was listening to one of the records. Like, I was kind of fascinated by, you know, the whole interaction with a record player, like, you know, putting the record out of the sleeve and putting it on there. It was just a lot more fun than putting in a CD and, you know, moving the tone arm. And I think at one point I put my hand on the record and it stopped. And then I lifted off my hand and it resumed playing. And that was really, I don't know if I can properly describe it in words, but it was really fascinating moment for me. Like, I was in control of the music and I could touch it. Obviously, that wasn't the best thing, like, for my parents' record collection, because it wasn't a record player that's designed for scratching, but it was still fun.
That's hilarious that you should say that, because I remember doing exactly the same thing with a record deck that I bought with my own pocket money that I'd saved up, and my dad telling me, you're going to break that. And in my case, it was, I was trying to hold the record at the first beat so I could get the pause button off on the tape deck. And I was kind of like learning to quick mix before quick mix was a thing. And yeah, I remember my parents being equally unimpressed with what I was doing. It's funny how it just comes to us, isn't it? It's funny how it just, it's something that we become fascinated with. So, okay, you're 12 years old. You kind of discovered the fact that you can manipulate records, and you are in school and you end up kind of making choices, and you're now kind of CEO of a software company. So what happened between times? Where did you, what was your college? What were your choices that got you to the point of thinking, you know what, we're going to found a software company?
Yeah, it was a bunch of steps and coincidence, I would say. So you know, after I eventually started to build my own sort of DJ setup, where I got a really cheap and crappy mixer, and I put a Discman on the one side and a record player on the other, and then I got my first Technics 1200s. That was really exciting. So this is pretty much the way I got into DJing, and I was basically DJing on the side until my early 20s, and I was doing it professionally, pretty much in clubs around Munich and Italy and a bunch of towns in Europe. and it was a lot of fun to me. But eventually, you know, I've grown up, so to speak, and I started like doing something serious, and I got into quote unquote, I got into college, and I enrolled for computer science. So I was pursuing a degree in computer science, but I also, I still had this fascination and passion for music, like both classical and jazz music, as well as like, you know, the music that I'm playing as a DJ. So I didn't really want to lose this. So for me, it was very important to still, you know, dive deeper into, you know, the art of music, if you will. So I also enrolled at the University of Music and Performing Arts in Munich. So I was studying pretty much both at the same time, computer science and music. And I had the vision. I didn't know exactly at the time when I started, like when I was 19 years old and I got into university, like what it is that I want to build or create out of this. But I knew I have this passion for instruments, for music, for DJing. And I realized computer science is extremely powerful. It allows you to build anything without investing any money up front. You can pretty much create your own world. So I knew somehow bridging those two disciplines could lead to something very interesting.
It's fascinating to hear that, because I think in a lot of people's lives, especially people entrepreneurs, that's the realization they have, isn't it? Certainly I can speak for myself, that the realization that I could write and I also had this massive passion for DJing and I could do it kind of was what led me into being a music writer, which led me into running a website, which led me into starting right. a DJ school. You know, without both of them, it could never have happened. So I want to ask you about your musical background, because you said you started playing piano at four. I'm presuming this was not your choice entirely. You've got parents who are musical, right?
Not really. So it's actually quite interesting, because my parents are not musical at all. Like none of them has actually ever played an instrument. Okay. I think my father, he always had a dream like to own a piano, just to have it like in the living room is something that kind of looks cozy and nice. So eventually he got this thing that I found in the living room, and to me it just looked like some other piece of furniture. But then I organically started like pushing the thing and pushing the keys, and I was similar to my experience with the record player. I was really fascinated. Oh, I'm pushing one thing and, you know, sound comes out of it, and I can manipulate it and change it and do something fun with it. And that's how I got into piano.
It's pretty young for, you know, were you seriously into it? Were you having, you know, was it kind of from then on, or were there periods where you just weren't interested in it?
No, of course there were phases. So obviously, you know, I started like messing around a little, and then, you know, the parents thing came where, oh, we should send our kid to some teacher who's so boring that, you know, after a few years, he completely loses interest in it, like that kind of thing. So that's how it started for me. So I got into piano lessons, and, you know, it wasn't voluntary all of the time.
Yeah.
And at some point I even got out of it. Like when I started DJing, I was kind of more interested in that angle, but I really got back into it, at the age of around 15, I had a very motivating teacher, who really showed me a different side of classical and jazz music, at that time. So I really got back into it. It was a really big passion. It has been a really big passion ever since.
So tell me about your DJing life, because you said that you kind of got into DJing. I'm guessing if you were traveling around and DJing in Italy as well as Germany and so on, that you were, at some point it was a big part of your life. But then you decided that you had to, in your words, grow up and do your computer science degree and the stuff you've told us about. But how long was that period when you were DJing kind of semi-seriously, if you like?
That was about... like when I was really into it, like 5 years doing it pretty professionally.
Okay. So was your DJ name the same as the name we know you for? Or did you have your own DJ name?
No, it wasn't anything crazy, just DJ Kareem.
Okay. And so tell us a bit about that. What was your best gig? How often did you travel? How often were you playing?
I had about two gigs a week, one to two, depending on the season. And like I said, pretty much around the city here in Munich. I think one of the most exciting gigs was something called Christmas Jam. It was like 3,000 to 4,000 people. And I was like performing, and I was doing a scratch and battle routine in front of like a few thousand people, which to me was kind of nerve wracking back then. But yeah, I would say that was like one of my biggest gigs.
Cool. So what kind of DJ were you? You just mentioned scratching. Were you kind of like a hip hop turntablist kind of DJ, or was it more house and mixing? What was your thing?
Yeah, hip hop R&B turntablist kind of DJ.
Okay, cool. So I did enjoy you saying that you decided that it was time to grow up, because there is the old joke, mummy, when I grow up, I want to be a DJ.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you have to choose. It's got to be one or the other.
Right.
Growing up or DJing. But you know, you made this decision. Was it your decision, or was there a bit of parental pressure saying, come on, son, you know, we expected more of you than this? What made you kind of decide that? Because you decided it quite early, I would say. You know, a lot of DJs, certainly in my case, I decided in my mid-30s, having done it for 15 years, that, you know, that's enough. I want to do something new now. How did that decision come about?
It was more, I mean, I was always fast. I was always interested in a bunch of things, and I loved math and I loved languages. So when I finished school, I started looking into different angles that might interest me, like mechanical engineering and a bunch of other things. And I just found that computer science is really the discipline where I find, you know, the most pleasure doing, like problem solving, languages, programming languages, those kind of things. So I never was a programmer in my youth. Like many of my of the students that studied computer science with me, they started at very early age and they haven't done many other things besides programming. But to me, it was very refreshing to dive into this new world of being able to create your own world.
Interesting. Yeah. And of course, the entrepreneurial side of you, as you said, realized that you don't need to buy a factory to make something when it comes to programming. You just need, you know, an internet connection, a computer, and a bit of time, and everything's open. So my question to you then about your background in music, I mean, can you read music? Is it something, were you taught professionally to read music? And so you're what I would call, you might disagree with me, but you're what I'd call a classically trained musician, right?
Correct. Yeah. No, that's exactly okay. Right.
Yeah, so as a classically trained musician, what has that knowledge and what has that background brought to your DJ software?
So I think through my musical background, we always have a very like musical approach to the software. And in fact, it's not only DJs that are using our app and software. It's also musicians. Like I know a lot of jazz musicians that use it, you know, to change the tempo of a song and you know, have the keys analyzed and use it for practice sessions. So that's something we don't necessarily design it for those people, but I think intuitively I have those people in mind when we work on features for the software. So I think that's one aspect, but also from the DJing side, like bringing in this musical element into DJ software. Like we were one of the very early, you know, companies in that area to introduce key matching and to make it an essential and integral part of mixing. Like not only analyzing the key and finding it, that's been around for a while, but actually allowing users, just like they synchronize the tempo of the song, to match the key of the two songs together. And I think this is something that comes from my knowledge and, you know, my musical background is having that aspect, like a more central focus of the software.
Okay, so I'm getting a sense that as someone who has, you know, enjoyed, for the sake of it, education, the love you found of learning something new when you started computer science, and just at the same time going off and doing your performing arts, I think you said, training alongside that, you know, you are someone who obviously has got a real love of education for just because it's great. Do you feel that as a software developer and as someone who's now putting a tool that is really awesome and allows you to DJ into the hands of people who maybe can't DJ, that actually you as a company, you've got a role in teaching, you've got a role in educating? And are you finding that a fascinating part of your job?
Absolutely. In fact, it might be one of the most fascinating aspects, because we not only you know, provide tools for making people's lives better or their performance better or their DJing. We make something possible that wasn't possible before. And one of my favorite examples is actually DJ Arch Jr. He's, I think, one of our most interesting users. He started at the age of 2. And he's now in Guinness World Record for the world's youngest DJ. And he started with our iPad app before he was even able to properly speak. And I think that there is a major shift right now in, you know, in who becomes a DJ and for whom it's even accessible. And I think we've played a pretty major role in that. And that's extremely exciting to see.
I think a lot of that is down to the platform as well, isn't it? I remember when my son, who's now 8, when he was, again, probably 2 or 3 years old, he was messing around on an iPad, and his dad, being a DJ, CEO of a DJ school, he found your app, and he found Spotify, and he knew the Ed Sheeran record because it was green with a black cross on it, and he called it the Green Cross song, and he was very good. He wouldn't let people dance. You had to stand still and watch everything he was doing. He got very annoyed if you tried to kind of enjoy it. You had to watch him. But it was, as you say, it's kind of like, in a way, it's how people are consuming music nowadays, isn't it? It's like, you don't just put it on and stand back and listen to it. You get on with playing with it, just in the same way that you were fascinated about playing with records.
Exactly.
All those years ago.
Right.
So I want to talk to you about Apple. Your software has been, right from the very beginning, synonymous with kind of DJing on Apple products. And I'm sure a lot of people, even those who didn't see you appearing on Apple's keynote stage, when I mentioned the fact that you have, are going to be like, wow, what must that feel like? So tell us how you ended up. Tell us exactly what it was that you did. I know you spend a lot of time with Apple nowadays, but tell us your biggest moment, you know, on the big stage with Apple, and how it came about and what it felt like to be there.
I mean, of course, for a developer, you know, being able to show your baby on that stage is like the holy grail. I mean, this is something you basically dream of, but it's the kind of thing that, you know, it just stays a dream, if you will. But yeah, I mean, of course, it was a very, very, you know, exciting and emotional moment. The moment when, you know, we had the honor as a company, after, you know, 10 years of hard work and effort and you know, making DJing accessible to everyone and in a way revolutionizing the art form, is being able to stand there at an Apple keynote and, you know, showcase our product on the newest Mac. So to me personally, this was like one of the most special moments throughout the whole time. And even as I stood there, it was still, I didn't really feel like I'm the CEO of the company representing the company. I mean, in a way I was, but it was kind of, I was standing there and I was DJing most of the time. Like, I was giving a demo of the software, I put on the headphones, and I was basically doing a DJ set on the touch bar of the newest Mac at that time. And so in a way it was the same thing that I've been doing since I was a child, is, you know, having fun with music and, you know, entertaining people while I'm doing it. Yeah, it was a very special moment.
But were you actually DJing, or were you doing a kind of David Guetta moment and kind of doing the victory lap, but it was all pre-prepared?
No, I was actually, it was live DJing. I was DJing on the touch bar, and it was really fun.
How much did you practice that? How long was it you were doing it for?
I mean, I had to practice a little bit, but when I perform on stage, I try to not be too practiced, if that makes sense. Like, of course, I try to make myself familiar with equipment before I get on stage, but then I try to be as intuitive as possible when I perform. So that gives it this extra element of, you know.
So you were genuinely ad-libbing up there on the stage?
Yeah.
Okay, so Kareem, you are a busy CEO. You have a company of 15 people, and you are, I think you said 15, and you are you know, you got stuff on your plate every day, like every CEO has. Do you still find time for DJing?
Yeah, I'm one of our pickiest users, and especially having an iPhone, like even when I'm on the train or on the bus, I still DJ. I do it every day.
Okay, so you find time at some point, you know, on the way to work, on the way back to open. And do you know, honestly, do you open your own app and do it, or are you kind of curious and messing around with other people's software? Is it how do you consume your music personally when you're away from the office?
Yeah, I'm a big DJ fan, even in my private life. So yeah, I use the app even for just listening to music. That's what I use.
Okay, cool. So tell me about your listening to music at home. Do you have a, you know, big wireless system that pumps around your whole house? Do you have a nice big Bluetooth speaker in your living room? What kind of setup do you listen to at home?
I don't really have a fancy setup, to be honest, because we have so much stuff here in the office that I usually I consume, you know, the music in high fidelity when I'm here at home.
Right.
I usually put on headphones and just mess around.
Okay. So what's your day-to-day life like as a CEO and developer? As you say, you still like to get your hands dirty now and then, which is awesome to hear. But what would a typical day look like for you in your job?
It really depends on the time. Like I think we have, you know, being quite a small team and company, it's very different depending on whether we're in the middle of a launch or if we're just working on an update. But pretty much, you know, I get into the office, start checking email, drink a coffee, then I might look at some code. Yeah, pretty much that.
So you did say that you like to kind of get your hands dirty a bit still. What parts of your job would you say you enjoy the most, and what parts can be a bit, you know, you're glad you've got a team around you that you don't have to do anymore? I'm going to tell you in my case, for instance, I've worked out that I'm not very good at visual stuff. I'm a I don't know, a words person, or I leave the design and the visuals to people in the company who are much better at that than me. But what would you say it is in your company that you particularly like, and the stuff that you're kind of glad you don't have to do on a day-to-day basis anymore?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I really still enjoy writing some code. I mean, I don't have much time for it because you really need to be very focused, and it takes a lot of time sometimes to just find a bug or something. So it's kind of an open-ended task. But that's what I still really enjoy. Problem solving and sort of mm-hmm. the software, making it better. I really enjoy being part of our whole design process, you know, making sure the software is intuitive to use, thinking of ways how we can make the app better and the overall experience better. I really enjoy that whole creative part and thinking about, you know, potential synergies and strategy for the software moving forward. Like, that's the part I really like. I do enjoy that I have an assistant and I have accountants that take care of that part of the business. So yeah, that's what I'm glad about, I would say.
I find that the tasks that happen over and over and over again, the same thing,
right,
are the ones that really trip me up. Because whatever it is, when I get to doing it for the 10th time, I lose concentration and mess it up. So if someone gives me 20 letters to sign, or, you know, by number 18, I forget my name and my hand doesn't know what to do. That's just me. I do struggle with systematic stuff. So I'm glad, I'm glad I've got people to put numbers into things for me and stuff like that nowadays. But anyway, I wanted to ask you about what you think the future holds for all of this, because obviously since 2006, you've been kind of at the cutting edge of, you know, back then, you and I both remember it well, the whole idea of DJing without something physical was pretty new. And in fact, right, if you just go back a few years earlier, the idea of a music file was pretty new. And, you know, music files were illegal. They didn't really exist in any legal sense. And so you've been right there at the beginning and all the way through. And we're now in 2018 and we've got streaming music and we've got artificial intelligence coming in. What's exciting you? What can you see in your kind of crystal ball over the next decade?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think the streaming part is I mean, it already is, I think, very, very essential to DJing. I mean, we pioneered it in 2014, you know, introducing streaming to DJ software and DJ apps, and basically making, I think, opening up, not only making DJing accessible to everyone, but now making DJ with, you know, millions of songs accessible to anyone. I think that that changed everything. And I think throughout the next years, that's really going to have a pretty strong impact in how the whole, you know, DJing as an art form is going to develop. Because, you know, we're already seeing that it's, you know, genres are a lot more open and loose now because people just have access to so many more music than they had ever before. Like when I started DJing on vinyl, you know, you pretty much had to pick the music that you're into, like hip hop and R&B. And you know, I spent all of my music budget on, you know, 12-inch vinyl records, and you couldn't just buy 1,000 records, you know, of electronic music when you were a hip hop DJ easily. So I think that is not only having an impact on the way people and what people DJs, it's also, I think it's going to have an impact on, you know, the kind of music that people produce and what we're going to hear in the future.
That's an interesting point. And do you think it's actually affected the, you kind of touched on it then and said that it's changed the music people hear and listen to and like, and the way they put music together. But do you think it's actually affected the songs themselves? Do you think that people are now combining more influences literally in the same track because of this being exposed to more stuff from the beginning?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the more, you know, musical styles you hear, it does, like, even as a, you know, speaking as a musician myself, it does, you know, when you're exposed to new music and new sounds, it does influence, you know, your creative work because it's something it's in your system, so to speak. So yeah. I think it absolutely has an impact on, you know, what producers and musicians are creating and composing.
I'm from Manchester, and I remember years ago seeing a guy called Tony Wilson, who started Factory Records and signed New Order as his biggest act, and a few others, Happy Mondays and so on. And he said that he thinks that the reason the music that comes out of Manchester is so good, and we're talking 20, 30 years ago now, is that they've got the best record collections because it's just got, the city's got a history as a big port city and a city that the boats come in from America to Liverpool and then up the ship canal to Manchester. That area of the world has just always had a very vibrant record shop scene. So Northern Soul and the early American R&B, and it was these were the records people had. And so that affected the bands coming out of that place and made it so vibrant. And I think we're kind of discussing the modern version of that, but kind of everyone's now got access to everything.
Right.
Aren't we?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's actually a very interesting analogy because, yeah, now it's pretty much, it's, you know, music is democratized. Like everyone has access to everything and every DJ has access to everything. So I think that, yeah, that has a pretty strong impact on what we're going to hear in the future.
So not so much in 2018, but certainly leading up to 2018, it was quite common to hear DJs kind of bemoaning this, what we just discussed, kind of saying, well, having everything is a cheat, and being able to, you know, not having to go and work for your music is a cheat, and something's been lost.
Right.
And, you know, as a company that has always championed where technology and music meet, I'm talking about us now, but I guess that describes you as well. Mm. We've always kicked back and said, no, you know what? Good talent will always rise to the top. But I feel that there's been a change from a DJ in inverted commas being someone who is a supreme selector of music, who knows where to go to get that music, and who has got the skills to play it in a way which is quite unique. That's kind of gone now because you don't need skills to play music, at least competently nowadays. You can learn that quite quickly, thanks to companies like you. And you don't need to know the right people or to be kind of at the back of the record shop on Tuesday afternoon at 2 p.m. when the van arrives from the distributor to get the good records. You know, you get them at the same time as everyone else. And the people who don't like this say, well, look, the art's gone. And as I say, I would argue it's changed. You know, what's your view on that? Is DJing becoming something that has lost something, or is it just changing, or is it indeed getting better? What's your view as someone who provides the software?
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I can totally empathize with those people. And I can see something, like with every technological disruption, I think you always lose something. Like, you know, with Photoshop, for example, you lose that, you know, people need to be able to draw a straight line, which takes, you know, a certain set of skills. And I think with technology, you know, we empower people. And by empowering them, we also empower people that have, you know, no previous experience or skills. So I think, like you said, I think the art form is not lost, it's changing. And I think it's about new things now, because we're removing some barriers. Like, you know, you don't need to stand there and practice, you know, mixing and matching songs so they're perfectly in sync. You can just use the sync button, or you don't have to stand at the record shop to get the newest records, because, you know, there's digital music and you can pretty much get everything. So as a DJ, you need to think of new ways, like you need to reinvent yourself, just like the tools are, you know, being reinvented. And I think that's actually very exciting times, because, you know, the whole art form is changing now. And the DJs who are living today and who are DJing today, those are the ones that are shaping the culture and the art form, you know, possibly for decades to come. So I think it's very exciting times for DJs.
So you mentioned streaming as a big, big change, and something that, you know, we are still, I think we're going to look back in 10 years time and realize that we're at the very, very early stages now of all of that. It's kind of like the beginning of email, you know, no one really knew what it was, and it didn't work for everyone, and they didn't know the legal issues around it. I feel that we're still there with streaming. So we kind of have discussed that, and I guess we agree that that's going to go very mainstream. What else do you see bubbling under that you think might become important in the next decade or half decade, apart from streaming?
Mm-hmm. I think, like, part of the whole trend of, you know, the traditional DJ skills just being obsolete in a way, like being able to match two songs, like I said, the software does it for you. So I think that opens room for many other things, like to express yourself with DJing. I think it's going to be more important to add your personal note to it. So I think the fusion of at least basic music production tools with DJ, I mean, obviously it's something that's been around for a while, but I think that's going to get even more important in the next couple of years, because, like I said, you know, the pool of songs is now democratized. Everyone has access to the same set of songs, but pretty much. So adding your personal touch to the music, I think is going to be ever more important. And, you know, using music production tools is, I think, one of the ways to do that. And I think it's going to be more important in the future.
Yeah, that's, you know, there's a lot of emphasis now on making music production more accessible and easier. So I wanted to ask you personally, you know, you are a classically trained musician and you are also a DJ. Have you ever produced music?
I've composed music and I'm still, I'm a passionate composer. Interestingly, I haven't really done like hardcore music digital music production. I still prefer, you know, sitting on the piano and composing my tunes there.
I just love the fact that you said I've composed music. I've never used such a word with anyone on this podcast before, and I think it might be a while before I do again, so thank you for that. So you mentioned Photoshop actually, and I want to move kind of in that direction now, because I think one of the reasons, and this is my opinion, one of the reasons that you guys end up on the stage with Apple and, you know, appear to be one of the companies that those guys admire, is that you've got a very, very strong design ethic. Your software looks beautiful. And I wanted to ask you about that. And I wanted to ask you whether that was always very important to you, or whether, you know, someone came on board and said, look, everything we do has got to be beautiful. How did kind of the strong design side of Algorithm come about?
No, I think that's really been one of the core principles since day one. I think it's one of the reasons that we were, like, as the co-founders back then, were attracted to Mac computers, because we thought everything was so beautiful and nice, and everything just worked. And that's why I think that there's two parts of the beauty. Like, one is the actual appearance, like it has to look beautiful, and the other is just it has to work beautifully. And those two aspects were really important to us from the very early beginnings of the company.
Okay, and how does that work in the company? Do you have someone whose job is design, or is it something that's kind of in all of your blood? How does it work?
So we have our chief designer, so to speak, who actually does the work of designing it, and we work very closely with him. But everyone in our company, I would say, has a design hat on, where they will review things very critically, and you know, we'll want to make sure that, you know, it looks nice, it's still easy to use. And I think we're very diverse in terms of the people in the company. Like, some have a background as professional DJs, some are not even musically trained at all. So we always try and make sure that the software is appealing and accessible to all of them, whether it's a professional DJ or it's a beginner or someone who doesn't even have ambitions to be a DJ.
Okay, so you're kind of self-testing it inside the company at all times and making sure.
Right, we are our own users, so to speak, yeah.
Can your mom use the software? Does she find it easy to use? Does she understand it?
Yeah, actually, she loves it. Like, she's not a DJ and she's not a musician, but it's the first time she was actually able to create some sound that at least sounds somewhat decent.
That's great. And what do your parents think about your kind of journey in life so far? Are they is it something that they kind of understand, or the kind of, my parents kind of still scratch their heads a little bit when I explain how I've got a company of 8 people and we don't have a factory. How does your family kind of see it?
I would say it's similar. My parents have always been very supportive, so they always let me do things, explore things, and do pretty much whatever I wanted to do in terms of my interests. So I really appreciated that. But they always were, you know, a little skeptic about this DJing thing and where that, you know, leads me into. So she was always surprised, like, how do you even make a living out of, like, still out of DJing? Like, she thought somehow, like, my mother, I'm still a DJ. Like, she couldn't really differentiate between, okay, there's this DJ software company and there is, you know, being a professional DJ. But yeah, I think when they watched the live stream of the Apple keynote, and she called me afterwards and she said, okay, now I get it.
Yeah, I can see that. And it's funny, in my case, it was when I wrote the book, when I wrote Rock the Dance Floor. You know, I, at that point, we had a team of 8. We were a 6-figure business. We had 20,000 students all around the world taking our products and taking our courses. And it still didn't, the penny didn't drop. But as soon as I wrote a book and people could see it on Amazon, that was it. You know, everyone kind of got it. And it was quite ironic because the book doesn't deliver anywhere near as much financially to the company as our, you know, as what we really do does. But nonetheless, I always tell the story that it got more likes on Facebook than my firstborn child when I said, "Here's my book, I've just published it." So, but it's funny, isn't it, how people, if they can't fit you into a category, they find it very hard to understand. Right. I think it's the yellow pages trick. You know, if you're not doing something that you could look up in a Yellow Pages directory, people struggle to kind of understand what it is you're doing.
That's very true.
Anyway, talking of other things, what outside of your love of music and computers and the tech side of, and obviously your job, what else interests you? What else do you get up to that is completely unconnected to all of those things?
I mean, there's a bunch of things. I personally think everything is in a way connected, even though it might not look like that at first sight. But I'm very passionate about psychology. I actually pursued a degree in psychology parallel to working at the company. So I have a deep passion for research and, you know, the human brain. And I think even that had an effect on the software in a different way. But yeah, that's why I think, like, computer science, music, psychology, everything is connected in a way to each other.
That makes a lot of sense. I can see that entirely. So even when you're running the company, you are continuing to educate yourself and continuing to learn.
Yes, I find that very, very important personally, that you, even though, you know, your company grows and the success grows and you know, the people you work with and everything, I still think that, or at least for me personally, I also want my mind to grow. And yeah, that for me, that was a very fulfilling way to achieve that.
How do you find time for everything? How do you fit it all in? What are some of your tactics?
I think my main tactic is just do the things that I'm really passionate about. So I couldn't, you know, get a degree on the side for something that I'm not like entirely committed, or like something that I wouldn't do as a hobby. So I think that is really the key. And when you have something that really excites you and that you're really passionate about, you'll find time. Like there is no such thing as, for me personally, I don't have time for something when I really love doing it. I'm just drawn into it.
That kind of makes sense. Yeah, that kind of makes sense. Have you ever found yourself reading a book and thinking, this is really, really hard work, and you just suddenly realize it's because you're not actually that interested
yeah,
in it?
Yeah, very true.
And conversely, you know, I don't know about you, but I can find myself watching a documentary about ABBA on TV, and I'm like, oh, there's nothing on TV. There's just this rubbish about ABBA. And then, you know, 2 hours later, I'm in tears, and I'm like, that was the best thing I've ever watched, because music's just my thing, right? So I just connect into it, and yeah, it drags me in. And so what have you done in your life, or tried, or had a go at, that you just thought, no, actually, that isn't for me. That's not, you know, didn't work out, wasn't something I wanted to do. What have you done that you backtracked from and had a second thought about?
I would say it was mechanical engineering. That's what I studied first for about 6 months, but I realized very quickly that's actually how I got into computer science. So that was an interesting experience. So even if you do something that you don't necessarily like, or that's not a really good fit with your personality, I think that's a very, you know, valuable insight. And that got me to, you know, look more for something that's more sort of in line with my skill set and with my passion.
Yeah. Sometimes it's the things that you don't want to do or that don't work out that actually teach you more than the things that you do, isn't it? Right. Same with DJing. The bad gigs teach you more than the good gigs.
Correct.
Yeah. So, okay. What other companies do you admire? You're the CEO of a great software company yourself, but what other companies do you think, yeah, I love what those guys are doing?
I think there is a bunch of companies that I really admire, especially the ones that have, like, you know, consistently delivered world-class products over a long period of time. I mean, so of course, you know, Apple, I mean, since I got my first computer, my first Mac, you know, I've been fascinated by what they've been doing consistently, you know, and the attention to detail. I love Yamaha, you know, as a pianist, I love the pianos they make.
Okay. And what is it about Yamaha compared to other piano companies that particular? I mean, they're huge, aren't they? We've both been to the Music Messe show in Frankfurt, and you know, most people have a stand. Yamaha have a building. They're just a massive company. What is it about them particularly that fascinates you?
I think that it's multiple things. Like, one is they're committed to, like, really, really high quality. I think some of their high-end pianos, they're some of the best in the world on the one hand, but on the other hand, they're open, you know, for technological innovation. Like this piano that I got from Yamaha, it's called, like, it's the Transacoustic series, and it actually allows me, it's a high-end, you know, classical piano, mechanical piano, but it also has digital components built in. So at night when I want to practice without bothering my neighbors, I can just, you know, plug in my headphones and still have the touch of a real grand piano. And I find that really fascinating, because they solve an actual problem. Like, they don't just do the same thing, like build a great piano like it's been done the past couple of hundred years. They also think in terms of the future, and they use technology in a very clever way and blend it with, you know, a design and, you know, mechanics that have, you know, established themselves over hundreds of years.
Yeah. So how does a piano work that you plug your headphones in and suddenly it's not annoying the neighbors? Explain to me how that works.
So I'm not an expert on the actual mechanics and how it, like, works in detail, but, you know, from a high level perspective, pretty much when you push a key, it hits the strings of your piano, and they basically, when you get into the digital mode, the keys, when you hit the key, it doesn't, they're shifted downward, so the key doesn't exactly hit the string anymore, but they still record the event that you push the key, and then they can create it digitally, and they,
wow,
do it through the headphones.
Yeah, I bet that's not a cheap product either, is it?
No, that wasn't the cheapest product I had.
No. Okay, so tell me about the plans for your company and your software. We're recording this at the beginning of 2019, February 2019. Tell us what you can tell us about what's coming.
Yeah, there's a bunch of things that I can't tell you about, but I'll do my best to at least give you something. I think it's very exciting times right now with, you know, the whole digital landscape changing so rapidly. So, you know, we find artificial intelligence, like that component, bringing that into DJing, music production, that there are so many things that we actually just, that we're just scratching the surface off, literally. Yeah. Those are things that we also want to put a lot more focus on, and that they're, you'll probably see some very interesting things from us coming down the road in that area.
Okay. So is artificial intelligence actually a threat to DJing in a way? Is it something that's going to make it easier for people to, who would have hired a DJ in the past, to not bother anymore?
I don't really think it's a threat. Like, you know, just like Photoshop is not a threat to artists per se. It's just what you make out of technology, right? So I think it's gonna actually allow DJs to go way beyond what they're doing right now.
Do you think that it's going to empower the best DJs rather than threaten them? Then is it going to give them stuff, open up stuff that they just couldn't do before?
Right. Yeah, I think it's gonna empower them, and especially now that you no longer have like 1,000 or a few thousand songs as your repertoire as a DJ. You're now talking about millions of songs, and there is whole new requirements, you know, for people to find music and to browse music, to play it. So, and especially, you know, being able to remix music, I think artificial intelligence definitely is going to be very, very interesting in those areas. And like I said, I think the music production angle, that's something that we just, we're starting to build out, but we think it's going to be a lot more, you know, it's going to be very, very important in the future.
Do you use voice control in your life? Is there anything you talk to, any technology you talk to rather than typing to, or, you know, nowadays, have you got Alexa or similar?
I personally, I find it a little weird, you know, when I talk to technology and no one else is in the room. So I prefer typing or, you know, interacting with technology in different ways. But that's just me.
Okay, so I read an interesting piece by Seth Godin recently, and he said, you know, he was talking about, should you say please or thank you to your technology? it's one of those questions of our times,
yeah.
Isn't it?
No, I can see that.
Cool. All right, well, Kareem at Algorithm, I'd like to thank you very, very much for spending the time to talk to us today. It's been fascinating hearing about your musical background and your diverse loves, your love of learning and love of education. And I want to ask you before we wrap this up, have you got your phone nearby?
Yeah, I do.
Will you open your Shazam app and tell me the last thing you Shazammed? I'll tell you mine if you tell me yours. Okay. I never make this up, by the way. I never have something waiting. I'm actually going to tell you the last thing I Shazammed.
Okay, let's see. I hope this won't be embarrassing.
It doesn't matter if it is. Trust me, mine probably is. My last one, mine.
Okay.
My last one was something called The Best by a band called Self Esteem. And from memory, that is a pretty 1980s sounding pop tune that I heard on the radio at the weekend. Tell me yours.
Okay, I just found it. It was Thomas Schumacher, Vorfreude. It's actually a German title, aka Talstrom Remix.
Okay, and that sounds to so that's an electronic track,
is,
right?
Yeah.
And where did you Shazam that?
Where do I see that? I don't even know. I think it was some cafe.
Okay. And where do you find most of your music? I mean, I'm like you. It's a cafe. It's Starbucks. It's it's a track on TV, or, and I actually use Shazam too, because I can't be bothered writing it down anymore. If there's something I just want to remember for a DJ set, I just Shazam it, and then I know that I can look it up later. And where do you find most of your music?
I find a lot actually through DJ, like our own app through Spotify, because we have that match feature that gives you suggestions. So that helps me find, especially when I'm preparing tracks and sets, it helps me find stuff that I didn't know. Lots of independent stuff. So that's one way for me to find good music. And obviously, you know, Shazamming something wherever I am that I find, you know, I like.
I heard Sasha the other day say exactly the same thing. And if it's good enough for a DJ with the pedigree of Sasha, just using Discover functions on Shazam, I think most of us are pretty safe doing that as well, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly.
Kareem, thank you very much for your time. It's been an awesome hour. I wish you, from Digital DJ Tips, we wish you all the best with Algorithm. We're looking forward to reviewing and using the stuff you come up with in the years to come, hopefully. And thank you very much once more from all of us. Have a great rest of your
day. Thank you so much, Phil. It was a great pleasure being on your show. Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.